Parliament Terrans in Australia, who he jokingly called the Chamber of Mines. And I will now ask you, please, to pay attention to Jim Keogh, and he will keep you entertained for a minute, giving some reminiscences of his days with Ron as a young boy. And I will go down and get this fellow out of jet lag. He's asleep downstairs. Good odd character. And I'll leave you over to Jim now. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. I'm sure Jeff won't take too long. I think about 4 or 5 minutes. So we've really got just a little bit of entertaining to do between now and then. I don't think we need to introduce Ron and his activities over the last, say, 10, 15 years, 20 years. So I'd like to date back just a few years and just remind you what this man was all about then. And even then, I think there's some of us around here.
Hope you're going to make some money out of your letter, Jim.
you'll be sorry you ever used this, Ron. I'd just like to hark back into some of these earlier days. And I'm...
Yep.
Just hark back into some of these earlier days. I'm going right back in time now. I'm talking about, the 10s and the 15s and 16-year-olds. But anyway, Ron was the very first one to introduce jazz of some sort into Kalgoorlie. And he used the What am I doing wrong?
You need a drink to sit through this.
All right. So, as I was saying, Ron was the instigator of any form of jazz, and Kalgoorlie and jazz never even formed part of Kalgoorlie at all, but Ron thought it did. So he would go and watch the movie before we did. Now, we've got the message?
Yeah.
After all that? And he would wait till the very appropriate time and then practice up and down this back lane between the Cremorne Theatre and the Cremorne Gardens. And they'd wait for this crucial action shot in the movie, and they start playing this trumpet of some sort. It had no description, neither did Ron. Ron didn't want to be known. And Ron doesn't believe all this, I know. But he was the very, very first to entertain us from the deck chairs out of the back lanes of Kalgoorlie. But there's probably a more rewarding comment to make for Ron. He, at the age of, must have been 14, 15, he decided that the life was a bit dull and his mates were sort of all edging him on to do something a little different, which wasn't very difficult to do. So he decided that he'd get this alarm clock, this well-known alarm clock, and take it into the Cremorne Theatre. And he would just set it for maybe, let's say the movie started at 8 and he'd set it for about 9, just before interval. And of course this alarm clock would go off. And everyone would look in surprise there, and this alarm clock would go, fire, and everyone just out of the theatre. Of course, Ron was the very last one to leave, so he would just walk up to where this alarm clock would be and just pick his alarm clock up and go off to the next movie and maybe in a month's time. So he had this little circuit around Kalgoorlie that he would continue to use this little this alarm clock stroke fire exercise on. You don't remember that, Ron?
No.
But... as you know, these sorts of stories can just go on and on and on, and we're going to get a chance to all have a say one way or the other towards Ron's other life, which I'm sure he's a little bit concerned about at this stage. So he should be. So with not a lot more to say, I think we're just... has anyone got a very short story for about a minute or... Oh, yes, Jenny. Why the surprise? Why the surprise? What happened?
I shall
take the milk back
from my speech.
Oh. But...
Excuse me. Well, I'm the microphonic guest of honour. God bless you all, and goodbye. No, I'm just going to say how very, very pleased I am to be in your wonderful sun-drenched country, Australia. God bless it. You know, before I came to Australia, they told me that it was really a land full of beer-swilling yobbos, surrounded by seas boiling with unspeakable monsters. Yes, and filled with a whole lot of convicts and their descendants. But really, I'm glad to be in a penal colony, because when you're going for a birthday party like this with sexagenarians, it's nice to think that you're in a penal colony, and God bless you, I'm sure you'll handle that one. Okay, well, yes. Who am I? I am Professor Sir Michael George Barrington, MP. I am representing the constituency of Lower Codlington in Gloucestershire. And I'm a Tory, proud of it. And I'm a... Oh, there's one here. Very nice to see. My family, of course, goes right back to the 16th century, and our stately home in Gloucestershire goes right back to the 16th century also. As a matter of fact, with the economic times in Great Britain at the moment, I think it's going to go back to the NatWest Bank very shortly. But by profession, I am a stomatoproctologist, and for those of you who have had enemas, you'll know what I'm talking about. And I'm a little bit jet-lagged, so if I don't make much sense tonight, for God's sake, forgive me. I was coming over on the plane, and I had a dream, very strange dream. I was dreaming about Parliament, government, and elections. And you know, it was once told to me that elections are nothing more than an advance auction on stolen goods. So I thought, what a wonderful thing to come over here and to help this man, Ron Manners, in the Chamber of Mines, and try to deregulate this whole country of Australia, because you've got the same problems that we've got in England, you see. I'm over here for the government and the Chamber of Mines for the Australian Commercial Deregulation Commission, or the ACDC. We're here to decrease the size and the cost of government, because really, it's the biggest problem that any country can have, and Australia is no exception. There's one big thing that they tell me about. Ron is a man of extremes. He's a man of love and a man of hatred. So I'm going to deal with the hatred first. I'm not a negative person, because he's not a negative person. I know that. This is to do with his pet hatred is bureaucracy. You know, I was in a building the other day in London. I was walking across into the middle of the room, and I saw a table with three people seated at it. There was a helpful civil servant, an unhelpful civil servant, and the tooth fairy. On the middle of the table was a £100 note. As I approached the table, the lights went out. Then I paused, the lights went on again, and the £100 note was missing. Who do you think took the £100 note? Was it the helpful civil servant, the unhelpful civil servant, or the tooth fairy? Well, honestly, you should know it was the unhelpful civil servant. The other two are merely figments of the imagination. I was also told that, you know, in the same dream, there was a brain sale. They're having brain transplants. And there was this particular series of brains there, all very, very cheap ones. They were all from business executives. $100 each, $1,000 each. On the other table were civil servants' brains. They were 50,000, 60,000, and up. I said, why are they so much cheaper, much more expensive? He said, well, they're never used, you see. I went to the doctor the other day, up in Harley Street, and he was an ex-civil servant, this doctor, and everything he said was a reflex. And I said to him, please tell me, I've got a problem. He said, what's your problem? Yeah, really, really, really terribly... couldn't care less. I said, what's your problem? I said, I've swallowed a billiard ball. He said, get on the end of the queue. Now, that's how it goes. And I also was told a story, which I think is very true. There was three men standing at a bar. One of them was a doctor. The other was a mining engineer. And the other was a civil servant. And they were all boasting about their pets, their dogs. And the doctor said, he said, my dog can do anything, you know. He said, come here, scalpel, come here. Woof, 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 scalpel came over. He said, okay, scalpel, do your thing. So scalpel picked up a knife, cut an incision in the carpet and stitched it up. Very, very neat. The mining engineer said, shafter, where are you, shafter? Little shafter, woof, woof, woof. And shafter got a spade out and dug a hole, found gold, put it on the stock exchange, everything was fine. The civil servant said, my dog's better than that. Oh, yes, yes. He said, coffee break, where are you, coffee break? Woof, woof, little coffee break came over. He said, okay, coffee break, do your thing. So coffee break screwed the other two dogs and took the rest of the day off. But have you seen the way they're going on with these random breath tests in Australia? I was here a few months ago, and it's damnable. It is damnable. Freedom, my God, it's gone out the window. Booze, buses, goodness knows what. I'm reminded of a story we had in England. There was two policemen waiting outside the pub at 11 o'clock, closing time. And this drunk staggered out of the bar. He said, Sir Fred. And all the people were saying, good night, Bill. So Bill staggered out all over the place, went up to his Jaguar, tried to get the keys in the door, and he couldn't. He fell on the ground. The two policemen went over and said, come this way, sir. Would you mind breathing in this bag? Negative. Down to the police station, walk the line, book on head, negative. Blood test, negative. They said, all right then, what's your name? And he sobered up instantly. He said, my name is Bill Smith. They said, well, Mr. Smith, what's your occupation? This is one up for us. He said, I'm a professional decoy. There was, in my dream, I fantasize when I'm flying. I sometimes fly when I fantasize. So, but anyway, there was, I was talking to Ron Manners, and he said, you know what? He said, I've just become in charge of Australia. I'm allowed to do anything I want. I'm not a dictator, he said, but anything that I say goes. And I said, what happened? He said, well, he said, Paul Keating came up to me, and he said, hello, Ron, now you're in charge, what can I do? Ron said, well, he said, what I'll do, I'm going to minimize government, I'm going to put all the departments into one, and then I'm going to put you in charge. What are you going to call the department? He said, I'm a bit of a clarinetist, he said, and I like music. He said, and I'm a sexogenarian. He said, I'm going to put you in charge of sex and music. What do you mean, sex and music, Ron? Well, we want this country to get going, you see, so sex and music, when I want your fucking advice, I'll ask for it. I'll whistle for it. Anyway, Ron has a few problems with bureaucracy, and I'm always trying to see how we can get out of it. And there's one very, very thing, very, very important thing to do, and that is to trick them. And the best piece of trickery I can point out to you, if you can picture now, a little man walking through the red light area of Paris. Walking through the Paris. See the red light. Goes up, looks at the time, looks at the number on the door. Knock at the door. Monsieur, what can I do for you? My girl, he says, I'd like please to stay with you for tonight. So she looks him up and down. He's very well dressed. She says, entrez, monsieur. So the next morning he pays her 2,000 pounds in sterling. She said, oh, it is très generous. You are a very, very generous man. Please, monsieur, tell me, will I be seeing you again? My girl, same time next week. So the next week she puts on a little meal for him, you see. And the next morning it's 2,000 pounds in sterling again. She
She said, it is such a wonderful thing for me to have to do business for pleasure with you. Please, will I be seeing you again for the third and for the last time, same time next week? So she puts the caterers in, champagne, cognac, soft lights, soft music, reads up the book on tricks. Next morning, 2,000 quid. It is such a pain in my heart to have to say au revoir to you, monsieur. Please tell me, where do you come from? My girl, he says, I come from Tel Aviv in Israel. She said, monsieur, it is such a coincidence. I have got a twin sister in Tel Aviv. Do you know her? Do I know her, my girl? As a matter of fact, she gave me £6,000 to give to you. Anyway. That's one way of getting around the prices, isn't it? Because Ron is a man of love, as I said earlier on. And Ron's major love is music and poetry. So I've got a couple of little stories that might exemplify his passionate love for poetry. He's published books on the subject, and he knows it intimately. But being a man of competition and enterprise, Ron likes to think of these particular principles applying to all of his loves in life. Two men talking about poetry. One says, well, he says, you know, he says, I think that Shelley was the best poet of all time. He says, I like Shelley. He's a very, very gifted poet. I say, well, no, he says, I think that Keats was the best poet. No, she says, I think, I'll tell you, Shelley would describe, we have a competition here, Shelley and Keats, how would I describe a man with bow legs walking down a hill? Shelley would go something like this. Over the hill and down the road came a man whose legs were bowed. The other fellow says, no, no, he said, it goes like this. He said, there'd be, Keats would do it better, he said, not just better. He said, lo, what manner of man is this who wears his balls in parentheses? I'm talking about poetry and competition. Unknown to you all, it's a new thing that's been going on for a few years. The British Commonwealth countries every year have a poetry competition, and it's usually held in Britain. And the two finalists for the last few years have been Australia and England. Representing Australia this year, last year, just gone, was Joe Sproggs of Bushy Creek, Northern Territory, Australia. Peter Guttenhall, and representing Great Britain was Bishop Littleton Barton Stewart of Broughton-on-the-Water in Gloucestershire. Well, you can imagine now the river Windrush, moonlight night, the rostrums all erected, crowds all gathered there, and the MC stands up and says, ladies and gentlemen, the timekeeper, all ready, tonight's poetry final is for £10,000. It must be a four-line poem, which must be metrically correct, and which must contain a word which I shall mention all in under 30 seconds. So they toss the coin, and it's the bishop's turn to go first. Timekeeper ready. The word in the next 30 seconds, Bishop Littleton Barton Stewart, is Timbuktu. A parson I've been all my life, saving men from sin and strife. Many a mile have I come through, all the way from Timbuktu, and the crowd erupted. Fantastic, you'll win the £10,000 and everything will be fabulous. Mr. Joe Sproggs of Bushy Creek, Northern Territory, Australia. Take the earmuffs off. Oh, yeah, sport, he says, yeah, I'll do that for you. What's the word, sport? He says, typical. He says, the word in the next 30 seconds, Mr. Joe Sproggs, is Timbuktu. Tim and I a camping went, met three shearers in a tent. They were three and we were two, so I bucked one and Tim bucked two, and he lost. Bias, that's all it was, you see. Anyway, I'm going to go down and have some more sleep in a minute, so I'm going to ask you all if you could paying attention to a very, very, very keen member of the family. That's Scotty, Scott Manners, and he's going to say a few words, and I hope he can keep talking until I can get that other reprobate from downstairs. Here he is, Scotty. Say a few words about your dad. Cheers.
I really don't know how to follow that. My speech is basically directed to one person, and I'll also start by saying, welcome to 60, Dad. It's my pleasure and privilege tonight to say something on behalf of all of your known children. The four of us that are here anyway, we don't know about the rest of them, but we'll leave them out for now. I'm told there's a couple of little darkies somewhere. Just jokes. The reason that I'm going to say something on behalf of my two brothers and my sister is that we all have exactly the same thing to say. We're all very lucky to have you as our father. We're all very proud of you and proud to have you as our mentor and for what you've done for us over the years. We know that you were put on this earth for mainly one reason, to taunt the politicians and to tease the tax man. We know that you tried to get us to do that as well, but unfortunately Sarah had a bad experience at senior high school when she got a 0 out of 10 in her economics essay. Her teacher did not like the reference material. I think he must have been a little bit to the left somewhere. He definitely wasn't a right man. One thing we admire about you, Dad, is your character and your test of character. Sometimes we don't know who is testing who. Whether it was you testing us, reading us The Hobbit, the entire Hobbit, and The Lord of the Rings, all three of the books. Three books? Three books of The Lord of the Rings.
This last year or the year before?
This is about 3 weeks ago. Or whether it was us testing you by demanding that the orphan calf down at Eshmans come back to Kalgoorlie in the back seat of your beautiful new Volvo. But we brought it back anyway. It was definitely a test. We know that you had a big test for us when you tied Craig, Ian and myself all together with you and dragged us up Pete Charles one glorious summer day. We know you have a wonderful way of doing things, and one thing that sticks in my mind especially is when we had a tenant in the car yard who would not pay the rent. There's one way to get rid of a tenant in a car yard. You get all the cars, you drive them up the road to the police station, you lock them up, you give the police the keys to the cars, and you walk away. And that's exactly what he did. One way to empty a car yard. Change the locks and everything back at the office. The guy never stood a chance to get back in again. Wonderful experience. We were brought up on a diet of tales and stories that a lot of our friends just found unbelievable. We had a thing called the Rock Cruise, which was almost a disaster over in Sydney, the idea was wonderful, but unfortunately it didn't get off the ground. And it was mentioned on Friday night that it was something like a bottom of the harbour. It sunk pretty quickly. We had a little thing called Coconut Grove in Bali, a wonderful little hotel with graft and corruption all around, I'm sure. I can remember taking bags of salami and cheese up there for some reason.
Smugglers,
definitely. We had a wonderful experience when we were kids also down the farm in Esperance of blowing up bunnies. Again, it comes back to his child of blowing up nuns' toilets. But I'm not going to delve too much into that. Uncle Jim said a few words on the deep and dark past, and I don't want to add too much to it because most of you know him as a fairly nice sort of a guy, so I don't want to disillusion you too much. But most of these stories, our friends wouldn't believe us at show and tell at school. They couldn't believe that we had such an exciting, such a different father. Theirs were just a boring old person who went to work for 8 hours a day, came home, went to the pub and drank. Ours was completely different. But what we really know is that we appreciate and we love everything about you and everything you've done for us. And what we can say is we love you dearly. Thank you.
Yes.
Thanks very much, Scotty. It's something that Barrington didn't show you was a book that was written by Ron Manners, and it's a genuine book. Copies will not be available afterwards. I think the federal government has clamped down on them. It's called Bureaucrats and How to Annoy Them. It does exist. The author is somewhat dubious. Anyway, I'd like to say, now that we're getting all these lovely little speeches together, I could hear that one downstairs. I was half asleep, of course. The other idiot was down there. But could we please ask you all to be ready and listen to Jenny. She's going to say a few words. I think she'd like to say something about her husband. Where is Jenny? Is she here? This is this oriental, you know, quiet and nervousness. Okay.
We all charged? Well, ladies and gentlemen, you recall the invitation tonight said that the gentlemen should come in casual dress and the ladies in something alluring. Well, Ron got it reversed and he came in his Thomas the Tank Engine shorts.
My Thomas the Tank Engine.
Your Thomas the Tank Engine shorts. You might find it difficult to recall what 1936 was like. Hitler was really on the go in 1936, and there was a real attempt to have some games, some Olympic Games in Berlin. I think it was 1936. And of course, along came Ron, which buggered the whole year up completely. The Olympics, the Manners family had its own problems, of course, you might recall, having Ron. Little did they know what they had spawned. That didn't dawn on them till later. And the later occasion, really, was the worst of the occasions, was when the Little Sisters of the Poor had their dunny blown up. And it wasn't by a fourpenny bunger either, was it, Ron? Somebody left some gelignite around, I believe. Now, Ron's a Goldfields boy through and through. You've heard other Goldfields boys speak of their boyhoods together, and it must have been quite a community. Ron's now got a house in suburbia in Perth. I imagine it's some sort of a retreat, some sort of a funk hole, but the dinosaurs found it today. There was a plethora of them on the front lawn. Did you know, have you ever quite really come to the conclusion, Ron, as how dinosaurs would find your house in Perth? No. I don't know whether anybody else saw them, but it was quite fun, really. Ron's, you've heard a lot about Ron tonight, and and some is really humorous, but I really want to emphasise Ron's very strong and good points, particularly his love of politicians and the laws and the statutes that govern this fair land, particularly the tax laws. I said to Ron, because my time with Ron goes back to the early 60s, and I said to Ron, for tax reasons, you have to keep all your vouchers for 7 years. And Ron said, I do. I said, yes, but you know, where are they? He said, I keep them outside in a big tea chest. And he said, and I give them a big stir with the broomstick every morning. And once he had a tax audit come along, and he put the poor young man in a room, unair-conditioned, facing the midnight, the mid-afternoon sun. He only lasted a day. Ron loves bureaucrats, no doubt. But it is easy, and amongst all this facetiousness, to overlook his achievements in business. The tender age of 18, when his father died, he inherited a thriving business of mining supplies, and Bob Muirhead will know what that's all about, of W.G. Madison Co. And Sid Webster of Noyes Brothers, and the Madison Co. business represented Noyes Brothers in a big way in the goldfield, said, well, we better teach young Manners how to run a business. And so he worked at Noyes Brothers for 4 years. And none of that training has been lost on Ron. He has been a successful businessman. I thought myself, when I met him first in the 60s in Kalgoorlie, he was quite a young man then, and I was reasonably young also, that there was a very great future ahead of Ron Manners. And I was a bit unfortunate that I retired from my firm in 1971, and I lost track of Ron until he appeared again in the late 80s, prior to the great crash, and I helped Ron put together the seed capital for Croesus Mining. I have never known anybody approach anything with the energy that Ron exhibited at that time. There was no hurdle that couldn't be overcome. And when Croesus was first listed, I've never forgotten the time when Croesus bought the Hannon South property from CRA, who thought it was too small for them to be bothered with. And it was a lot of money. And Croesus didn't have much money, but Ron had the contacts, and I've never forgotten either the succession of faxes of an underwriting agreement that Ron wheedled out of a firm of underwriters in London. And each time the fax came, it was conditional, slightly less conditional, slightly less conditional again, until finally Ron had got from them, all within 24 hours, an unconditional underwriting agreement which permitted Croesus to have a rights issue which funded the purchase of the Hannon South plant and the mine. And that illustrates what I'm talking to you about, the energy that Ron Manners has and the ability to overcome great hurdles. And in fact, the horizons really were, in my mind at that time, a bit beyond what Croesus could achieve, but not for Ron. I enjoy, and I think I've heard others say tonight how they enjoy, his ability to think laterally. There is no hidebound boundaries in Ron's thinking. I also enjoy his erudition. That's been proven by his authorship of two books, and he's doing another one. I enjoy his sense of history. Ron, there wouldn't be anybody else that could open a mine twice.
Three times.
Three times, is it? I remember visiting Kanaana, which was just a tract of land where once was a thriving mining town, where Ron had erected a cairn, which was on the site of the first Manners & Co. business. And that really is a sense of history. It's a sense of history that I haven't personally got, but which I find very, very wonderful. He has a balanced point of view of things, he's inquisitive, and he's observant. And if there's any attributes that are required in business, it's inquisitiveness and the power of observation. Then, above all, one talks, and I'm an accountant, and one's been, and I have been taught to think in neuter terms over all my life, and forgetting the position of people. One talks of the company, one talks of the board, one talks of the business, one talks of the profit. One has a term, a neuter term, for so many things in business, and yet not one thing can happen in business except it's done by people. There's not a tuppenny nut and bolt can be sold by the business except that two people interact, the person selling it and the person buying it. And it's so easy to forget. And Ron, your sense of motivation of the people in your business and the people around you, I find a very marvellous attribute. I haven't observed, as the years have rolled on with Ron, any lack of resolve. He may have sold out of a substantial portion of Croesus Mining, but he has taken an interest in the company that bought it, Eldorado Corporation. He's joined their board. You better keep a beady eye on Eldorado, because Ron won't be satisfied unless Eldorado is itself a huge success. Ron, I wish you well with that venture. It's an international company, and again it illustrates the breadth of vision that Ron has. You know him very well, but there's an old saying, very true one, behind every good man there is a woman. There she is, Jenny. Behind every good man there is a woman. You heard Jenny tonight, and I think you would join with me in saying that Ron's a very lucky man. 7.5 years of marriage, this is the 8th year, I understand 8's a very lucky number. And it seems to be that way, doesn't it? There's one thing I want you to do, Ron, is to learn to travel better. I want you to spend less time in the air, going to and from airports, more time where you go. And especially if you've got to take Jenny with you. Is that right, Jenny? It'll take a while, but we'll get in there. Ron, I meant it when I said that I enjoy working with you. I think anybody that has worked with you, not for you so much, they work with you, I think, would express the same sense of pleasure. I've enjoyed it. I think others that have expressed their words here tonight have also expressed their pleasure in your company. So I want everyone to join now in a toast to our birthday boy, Ron. Yes, it is. No, it's there somewhere. Did you take it away?
John, was it champagne?
Yes, it was. Just give me a little bit, thanks. That'll do,
Thank you very much.
I'm also going to lead you in the singing. That's bad luck. A toast, ladies and gentlemen, to our birthday boy, Ron Manners, on his 60th birthday. For he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow. And so say all of us, and so say all of us, and so say all of us. For he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow. And so say all of us. Hip, 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 hip. Ron. Go on, dear Ron.
Well,
Thank you very much, Harry. And we're going to cut the cake a little bit afterwards. So what I'd like you to do is to, in the next minute, I'm going to ask Ron to come and reply. And let's hope that we can have some dynamism in his speech too, because he really has had all the attributes of his life pointed out tonight, and I echo them too. They're very, very true. I'd like to give a little poetic finish to my dissertation this evening, and that is, it's crude doggerel, but at least it means something. Ron, as you know, is a fighter for freedom in his own way, and most of us are, if we only think about it, if we try. And it goes like this. So let the flame of freedom light, and let us all be fanners. This flame will grow an awesome sight. For John, our man, Ron Manners. Ron.
Thank you, Jeff. It's all very embarrassing and overwhelming. It really is. I've always thought of somebody getting to be 60 as being a very miserable, mean sort of an event. But 60 doesn't seem too bad. I guess I've always thought of anyone being old as being somebody about 20 years older than whatever age I was at any given moment. So I guess that saves me from feeling that I've actually got there yet. So in another 20 years' time, I'll start feeling sorry for myself, perhaps. And maybe this old age thing is simply just a bad habit. And I think if you're extremely busy, you won't have any time to practice a bad habit like getting old. So maybe that's the thing going for me. But I think if there's anything that has changed of recent times, it's the fact that you start to value people more. And it's on an occasion like tonight when you sort of start running through your mind the number of people that you meet. And I guess if you live long enough, you get to know everybody in the world, and that's almost how I feel sometimes. But it's when you get to you mark a little milestone like it is tonight, you start sorting through this sieve of who you'd like to be with as you pass a particular milestone, and I guess you look around and you say, well, these are the very special people in your life, and you know that I've got a wife called Jenny, and this is pretty significant, and I'd been suggesting to Jenny for many years that we get married, and she felt the time wasn't appropriate, and I never knew what this meant. But then we went to 1988, and that's the Chinese double happiness. And suddenly Jenny said yes, and that made me extremely happy. And I think Jenny hit the nail on the head when we managed to gather all the four children together, the Higgins, Scott, Craig and Sarah, all in one place at one time. Almost a remarkable achievement, and these things become very important to you. So that's really what life's all about is just people, and I think Harry covered that very well. It's, you know, inanimate objects like companies and organisations don't do anything. It's just the people that you gather around you. They do these things. It was interesting hearing, and it sounded pretty serious, some of the stuff that's been going on over the years, but it's really hard to think back on anything that's worthwhile. And when you get to 60, you start getting these little mental flashes of events that you think of. I woke Jenny the other night at about 3 a.m. like this little flash. I don't know why it came to me, but it was back when I was about 17. I'd had a car accident with my arm that involved me being in hospital for some time, lying down, and I think it was a couple of years, and
back in those days, there was all sorts of treatment that they gave you, and one, what I remember, it was in St. John's, Subiaco. I remember that. And I really don't know what on earth this was. What this had to do with fixing an arm, but they had this habit of giving you an enema about every 24 hours. And I'm not sure some of you in the medical fraternity whether this is still prevalent. This is a habitual enema. But I remember this. This other flash came back to me. It was the particular lovely young sister that used to present with them. I used to gaze at her and think to myself, under different circumstances, a different set of circumstances, perhaps anything could happen. But anyway, here she came to give me this enema. I noticed very clearly the state it was a brand new hose. I do remember this, and while she wasn't watching, I got my pocket knife and I chopped off this little end of the hose. I popped it in my mouth while she wasn't watching. Anyway, she came in with this great gusto. She was feeding in like a bloody overwrought fire brigade officer feeding the hose, and I turned around and I said, I just fell off. She threw up her arm and ran for the bloody wall. She brought back the bloody mother superior to finish me off. I rang up the other one. I started to tell Jenny about this. Jenny kept me on the stuff. She went back to sleep when I started to be thinking about all the other things. It's amazing when you look back, you know, it's got a prioritization, isn't it? We call it in medicine, remember the things that are important. Well, no doubt I can think of many more things. I'm a bit worried about this concoction that Gavin's presented. I see Gavin, it's not full. I wonder how Gavin managed to get the cork back in there. I've been sampled. Perhaps it's evaporated. But this 1975, that's a fair vintage now. I think this is really appropriate that it's come to us on this occasion, because Jenny and I are heading off to Mexico tomorrow, and one of our good friends just faxed somebody from the Sydney Morning Herald to us this morning that said that this Montezuma's Revenge, that's like the equivalent of Party Billy in Mexico, scientific evidence has it now that far better than these Lomitols and all these other pills that they give people, but it is Australian red wine. It's the complete antidote for this Montezuma's Revenge, something like Gavin. Gavin, you may have given this on a light-hearted note, but Jenny and I may need this on the way around. And Jeff with his many, Jeff and I have shared many remarkable situations together, and my times of need, Jeff has provided a roof over my head. No, not for the two-sided. That's a lot of fun. And Harry and Bob, of course, are very close associates of mine, and it's a wonderful environment in which we work, and the many people in which we have relationships with, because we've got this total honesty. And if you're getting a little esoteric from time to time, this simple message you get back is that, now cut the crap. It's really, really wonderful to be working in a very honest environment, and I'm just so happy to be able to enjoy tonight with us. And I think we've been subjected to many, many, many words tonight, so I'm happy to call it a halt at that stage. But all I can say is thank you very much for being here with us tonight, and let's spend the rest of the night moving around and talking to many people, many friends,
that because the pressures of life are such that we just don't get enough time spending time, real good time with. So thanks, folks. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Ron. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to pause for a while, have some food and some drink, and we're going to cut the cake a little bit later on. So, back then.